charge requirements for California Department of Transportation, District 9, has been pulled from the agenda. So we will move on to item number 6, update delegation of authority to executive officer. Ms. Kanyon?
Yes, I'd like to invite Mr. Larson up. This is a, it's not a continuation, but it's a follow-up from our previous meeting where the board gave staff direction at that meeting. And so this is the culmination of that direction. And I'm going to hand it over to Mr. Larson while he goes through that item.
Good morning again, Chair Cox, members of the board. Bob Larson, a senior environmental scientist. And as Ms. Koyumjin said, we did have a great workshop on this in May, and again, my thanks to board members for the feedback and the direction we got. We had really good discussion, and I think that led us to this place today. I know that not all board members were able to attend in May, so actually my presentation is a little bit of a rehash and a quick review of where we were, talk about some of the reasons why this action is appropriate for this time, and then provide a recommendation. So recall that Puerto Colón, Section 13223, allows the Water Board to delegate all of its authorities to the executive officer with the exception of a number of items. Those items are listed here, the authority to promulgate regulations, issue, modify, or revoke basin plans, water quality orders, waste discharge requirements, or cease and desist orders, hold basin plan hearings, and recommend actions to the Attorney General for enforcement cannot be delegated from the Water Board to the executive officer. With those exceptions, again, the Water Board does have the authority to delegate its authorities. As we talked a lot about in May, there are 6 existing resolutions that that cover the delegation of authority. I've summarized them in these next 2 slides. The first one there is probably the most important. It's a broad delegation consistent with the Clean Water California Water Code that delegates all of the authorities without exception. There are then a number of additional resolutions that either clarify or in some cases limit those. There was a resolution in 1991 that talked about preliminary closure plans. In 1993, the board adopted an order talking about the authority to issue prohibition exemptions for Tahoe and Truckee. In 2000, emergencies were addressed and the lack of a quorum. 2008, the board adopted another resolution looking at, again, at prohibition exemptions for Tahoe and Truckee and clarifying and providing limits on when that can be done. And then lastly there in 2010, delegating the authority to issue administrative civil liability orders when no hearing was required. So again, there are those 6 resolutions on the books right now relating to delegation of authority. The need for action, why are we doing this now? As we started those last 2 slides, the first delegation of authority was in 1990. Those delegation authority resolutions are quite dated, and in some cases they conflict with current policy and law. Specifically last year, this board adopted amendments to the Water Quality Control Plan for the Lahontan region to streamline some of the Tahoe and Truckee prohibitions, among other items. So the existing prohibitions are in conflict with our basin plan, and again, they're also in conflict with existing laws in other areas. So to say, and that's also to say that these multiple resolutions are just confusing. It took me quite a bit of time to kind of wade through all of our history and figure out where those exist. I know Patty's done the same thing, and so the existing process is less than clear. So it's a good time to address this and figure that out. In May, I laid out 3 different options as to how we could approach this delegation of authority. The first was essentially to sort of take the 6 previous resolutions, update them for current policy, and include all of that content in a single resolution. The second option that we discussed was a simple resolution. This would be consistent with other regions that doesn't necessarily specify any policy details but provides broad authority in a manner consistent with the order that this board adopted in 1990. And then lastly, we talked a little bit about a blend of items 1 and 2 that included some of the information on selected policies while still providing some flexibility and broad authority. As I said, we had great discussion, and again, my thanks to you for the direction and feedback. This is what I heard, and correct me if I'm wrong or feel free to answer questions, but the direction that I got from this board and that staff received was to draft a streamlined resolution that was consistent with other regions that avoids specific policy references and also avoids any subjective criteria as to when an item should or should not be brought to the Water Board. There was some discussion as to, again, whether or not controversial items or other items might be brought, and again, I think there was some good talk about whether those specifics were needed, and the decision was they probably are not. Another thing that's not listed here that we talked quite a bit about was the desire to maintain clear communication between the executive officer and the water board when delegated authorities are being exercised, as well as ensure transparency between the water board and the public and stakeholders. So that lands us essentially in two, which is a simple resolution that is consistent with other regions. We eliminated some of the policy specific details and provide, again, a nice streamlined resolution that delegates the water board's authorities. Again, a streamlined resolution, as I talked about, the desire to maintain that communication between the executive officer and the water board. We spent some time actually reviewing sort of the policies and procedures that are in place between the executive officer and the water board, as well as notification requirements for the public and stakeholders. All of those are really consistent, I think, with the board direction. Some of those are summarized in your packet. Ms. Coyumden did a really nice job just now exemplifying how that communication works. Executive officer reports on a monthly basis, for instance, keep the board informed as to when what actions are being taken. And so, again, the existing notifications, the existing policies for adopting items and ensuring that both the board and stakeholders are engaged remain in place. The last point here is the proposed resolution that's before you also rescinds those outdated resolutions. Again, that's the most gratifying part of my job at this point, is to rescind those six resolutions that, in many cases, don't make sense. So I know you have a busy day today, so that's all I have for you. I'm happy to answer any questions, but our recommendation for you is to adopt the delegation of authority resolution that's proposed. Thank you.
Are there any questions? Any comments? Dr. Hunt?
Yeah. I came away from this discussion thinking that we had settled on the third option, more of a blend.
My apologies.
And I don't think the board really had come to closure on different things were discussed, but I don't think we had reached a consensus on where we felt out. And I'm trying to remember, was it Region 9 that had this? But we spent some time discussing a list of about six items. Was it Region 4?
It's Region 9. Yes.
Was it Region 9?
Yeah.
And Mr. Sandell correctly pointed out that some of them were subjective and some of them were process. Is that right? I'm working from memory.
Yeah, Mr. Pumphreys had some good comments as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was some discussion of the subjectivity of some of those items.
I actually don't have a problem with, I don't see the problem with some of those items being subjective. And I think that there is value in putting in print, in black and white, what our intention is. So that people can refer to it down the line and don't have to just work on memory. So I would be in favor of, so I'd like to, I mean, so what is the problem with having subjective items in there if it's just expressing an intent? I mean, I don't see that this is really something enforceable, that, you know, we would take action, penalize somebody. I mean, I don't know. It's really just an expression of our intent. That's how I see it. And I think there's value of having it written down so that everybody is on the same page about what our intent is. Mm-hmm. So I would like to, I mean, if you could bring back that list for us, run through it or something, so for us to discuss it more, I would be grateful for that.
Certainly. At the pleasure of the board, whatever you like. I have that list in front of me. I'm happy to read it to you, and we can discuss that. And if we choose to amend the resolution, that's something that we can either do, you know, I suppose, at this meeting and sort that out. Again, at the pleasure of the board. So would you like me to read that list?
Well, we can hear from other board members.
Okay.
Could you write it on that?
Mr. Pumphrey, do you have any comments you'd like to share?
My general comment is the purpose of avoiding subjectivity is so that there's a predictability and an assurance to the public, to ourselves, to our staff, to other agencies about what it is that we're doing. The danger in having a lot of subjective options, or having any for that matter, is that you begin to develop an anecdotal history about how the agency operates at different times under different circumstances, and it allows you to sort of make up your process as you go along. That's, of course, a worst-case kind of description. And I understand that it's a worst-case kind of description, and people of my ilk often make examples of bad things that probably would never happen. That notwithstanding, though, I think to the extent that you can express the intent of what you're trying to do, and I don't have a difficulty with that, but I really have, maybe it's just my experience, maybe it's just my background, but trying to figure out what it means, what subjective criteria actually mean, and how you're going to try to approach an issue, and does it count if it was done differently 2 years ago or 6 months ago? How do you take that into account? Those things, I think, create problems that are not inherent in the situation, are really difficult to deal with, and don't have to be problems. So that's sort of my answer to what's wrong with subjective criteria.
Can I ask a question,
yes,
Mr. Pumphreys? So how do the problems that you mentioned of developing an anecdotal history and lack of predictability, how is that solved by having nothing listed, by being silent on all those factors? I don't see that it's any different.
Well, I don't see the silence, I guess.
Well, if it's not written there, then we're being silent.
No, we're choosing not to include something. I think there's a difference between being silent and choosing not to include an option for that can be taken. I mean, I thought that in the discussion in May, we had taken the list of that was given to us and had sort of wheedled it down. I was not surprised, I guess is what I'm saying. I was not surprised to see the proposed document that's in our packet. Maybe I took away a different sense of what had been accomplished then.
But so if there's nothing written there, how does that avoid developing an anecdotal history? I mean, it seems to me that that issue that would happen with, I mean, it would happen anyway if there's nothing there. So I guess I really just don't see the value of not elaborating a little more on what our intent is for the purposes of communicating with ourselves and with our stakeholders and the public. And if we can't be more specific, then the words that the wording that Region 9 came up with, well, we can't be more specific, but if we can too. I mean, that would be great too, but it just seems to me the value to have some of those items, and I was leaning more towards the policy items as opposed to the procedural items, and maybe it would help if you would write them up on the board.
I think we'd be better served if we really knew what that list was,
yeah,
or refresh
exactly
ourselves as to that right now.
Someone better can.
We could also pause for 5 minutes and I could get them printed.
Mr. Sandel, do you have anything you'd like to add to the conversation? I'm not sure that I see the harm in having a bullet list following what we have for the resolution now, saying that the board promulgated this, the board's intention of promulgating this is the following, just a list of, very general list of what our intent was.
Laurie, you're
going to
use a darker pen.
I'm
not sure I see the
maybe
part
we should.
I think we should pause for 5 minutes and
we could
go to
some
probably
helpful.
Well,
we
could do that. We could do that. Mr.
Dyes. I'm very pleased with the resolution that it proposed, but I would be happy to discuss some other things. Yes.
Can I weigh in just briefly, I guess, on this discussion with respect to I think your points are well taken, Dr. Horn, and I appreciate Mr. Pumphrey's comments as well. I think you can kind of flip it on its head as well, and this is kind of where I left the conversation. Again, my apologies if we as staff misunderstood. The subjective nature of it, whether it's written or not, is in action, right? And, you know, I think Lori's going to write some of these things on the board, but matters of a unique and unusual nature, matters of controversy, these things are, in practice, already considered by the executive officer when the executive officer decides whether or not it needs to come before the board. And Patty and I think had great conversation about this in terms of whether it's PG&E or something. There's a bunch of delegated authorities that the executive officer chooses not to exercise simply because they are unique or controversial or there are other reasons. And so that anecdotal action is already in play. And so I think Mr. Pumphrey's points are well taken in terms of writing them down creates an expectation of some sort of decision that is difficult to quantify. And so that was sort of, you know, again, and I don't have a horse in the race. It's no problem to write it, you know, to include it in the resolution. I guess I'm on the fence in that I don't see value in it much either way. And so from a, you know, I'm always looking for pithy language. And so in crafting a resolution, it was determined that really the things that matter are when either a board member or the executive officer asks or chooses and makes a conscious decision, the factors driving that decision are likely due to these things or 50 other decisions. And so that was what was left focused. But again, we're at the board's pleasure and happy to add things as needed.
Thank you. Mr. Pumphrey.
One way to approach this would be to, on the second page of the, well, on B-6-8, item 3B, the executive officer determines the item should be brought to the water board public meeting based on, but not on the following criteria, or including but not limited to, and then you could list these things. But I think as a practical purpose, you could list 150 things.
Oh, sure.
And so the question to me comes back to the board's confidence in making its hire of the executive officer, that the executive officer is going to use good judgment in exercising their authority to make that determination that's inside the resolution, and that they're not going to do it willy-nilly and they're not going to do it capriciously. And of course, were that person to do that, we might have some difficulty, or a future board might have some difficulty with that person. So I think part of the trade-off that I was hoping to talk about in May was this pithiness. Never thought of myself as being pithy, and I'm not. So that's probably why I never thought of myself in that fashion, now that I look at that question. But and so that's the advantage I see. You know, you never, what's the last, it's like, who's the last guy left off the All-Star team? What's the last possible one of these things that we think we ought to include in the factors for consideration? And so I just think that if you have faith in your executive officer and you believe you've made a good choice and they exercise good judgment, that we're covered.
If I could make a comment there. One of the, you know, just bringing an example from other arenas that I work in, there annually resolutions of this import are brought up for review by the board, so that we can see how it worked in the prior year. Are there any amendments that need to be done? And modifications can be adopted under a new resolution number, or nothing at all can be done except, you know, the pleasure of reviewing a document that is working for the agency or the board. So I just throw that out there for thought. That can also be something that's incorporated in the resolution, that this be reviewed on an annual basis by the board. Dr. Martin.
To Mr. Larson's point that this is already the culture, many of these things are already the culture of the board, of the staff. So I have observed other agencies develop a culture, But it's not transparent to other people, outsiders, what the culture of that board is. And that ends up creating a lot of conflict and tension between stakeholders and agencies. So I see this really more as a matter of transparency, of us being transparent about what the culture of our agency is, of what our board is, and what our philosophy is towards dealing with some of these issues. So I guess as I'm thinking about it, I feel more strongly that I would like to have a list, some of these items. And I appreciate, you know, I mean, we can go on, and I don't think it's worth belaboring and trying to be perfect about this. So language to the effect of including but not limited to, I think, is a good suggestion. But I think it is useful for all of us and to be transparent to external audiences about what the philosophy and culture of our agency is.
That's a good point. Mr. Larson, what do your red asterisks mean?
Those are included. I think Dr. Horn just made great points, and I think we tried to address this fact. And again, if we did so poorly and we need to add additional language, by all means, we will. I do want to bring the board's attention to.
You
I
never
guess,
do anything poorly.
Well, thank you. Items 3 and 4 are where we attempted to address this. And again, so item 3 is the one that essentially addresses these two issues, right? Anytime that a board member request or an EO request should be brought to the board, it is. And then, you know, I think thank you for the memory. We did talk about this notion of when considering this, you know, the executive officer should think about some things. Mm-hmm. And so that's addressed in item 4, where we said, in exercising the Water Board's delegated authority, the executive officer should consider whether the action departs from established Water Board policy or is of significant stakeholder interest. Those are the items that we felt addressed that larger question, I think, trying to be transparent and not be, you know, secretive about what's being considered. And those were the items that floated to the top in terms of the most important decision-making factors. Is it something that is, you know, and that's almost like this, right? Is it unique and unusual? Is it depart from policy? Is it something that is dramatically different? And then again, is there stakeholder interest? And we see this, again, a lot in the South. We see it in the North. The executive officer has broad authority to do many things that are brought before the board simply because it's important to the community to hear about it and be involved. Okay. And so if there is significant stakeholder interest, that's something we wanted to include here. So this is the list that's included in the Region 9 resolution that was referenced. And again, I think where we started to go down the slippery slope of subjectivity was unique, unusual, and significant. Those are all pretty soft words. But we tried to keep the spirit of those, in that, again, I think who's making the decision of unique, unusual, or otherwise need to be brought, and that's the executive officer that needs to consider, again, whether it's a departure from policy or something of significant interest.
I think that's why we were staff trying to struggle to use some of these words. And so, for example, in 4, we thought maybe significant stakeholder interest was a better way of gauging controversial, for example. You know, so, but if you add, I think you asterisk the second one, which was used in here, you really have a full.
Okay, I guess I would be happy if we put the word controversial in number 4 somewhere. And again, that's really, and I understand, you know, that maybe. Subjective, but on the other hand, it is reassuring, I think, to our audiences that when something is highly controversial, it will, you know, float higher in the decision-making process in this board. And I think that would, so with the addition of, you know, the executive officer should consider whether an action departs from established Water Board policy, is controversial, or is of significant stakeholder interest. With that change, I would move that we adopt.
Can I beg a question? And again, I want to stress staff's desire and happiness to act on whatever the board chooses. Can you help me understand the difference between significant stakeholder interest and controversial? It's just a language and a thoroughness thing, I understand. Is that the intent then at that point? Because as Patty said, that was basically our intent by that.
It's a matter of tone. Okay. I think significant stakeholder interest sounds a little too antiseptic.
But controversial also could mean that the stakeholders don't agree within the stakeholder community.
That's true too, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Point taken. Thank you for the clarification.
And
the suggestion.
Well, I just want to suggest too that there might be circumstances where controversy makes it maybe more appropriate for it to go through a process where it's not before the board. And I know that Amy disagrees, or...
No, I don't disagree.
Well,
what the executive office should consider. It's not saying that if it is controversial, then it should come before the board. It's just saying that just to think about it.
Okay, because yeah. I agree that when we have the list, it does sort of suggest that these are the things that people will expect that will come before the board.
And if I could add context to help, I know this will help the board. As a practical matter, that list is kind of what I do. And so what I do is, if I have those, I will pull board members to see what they think. Would you like it to come to the board? Would you not? I can make one controversial one when you chose it not to come to the board. And then I often share that with the chair and say, these board members said this, these board members said, what do you think? So I just want you to know that's the process I use to gauge whether it should or should not come to the board. And so based on the breadth of that guidance.
No one is complaining, at least I'm not complaining about the current process that you use at all. So it's really just a question of being transparent with our audiences. And as I say, with the amendment of those two words, I would be happy to adopt this.
Is that a motion?
Yes.
I would second the motion. Yes.
And a motion and a second. Ms. Sheehan.
Kimberly Cox.
Aye.
Keith Dias.
Aye.
Dr. Amy Horan.
Aye.
Don Jardine.
Aye.
Peter Pumphrey.
Aye.
Eric Sandel.
Yes.
Carries.
Conversation. Thank you, Mr. Larson.
Thank you again, members of the board. It has been, again, one of the more gratifying experiences of the board. It's just awesome to get direct feedback like this, and I appreciate it so much. So thanks again for engaging.
And we are now at item 7. This is a